Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith, and hope. Discover more interviews at openhousecommunity.com.au.
The release of data from the 2016 census was always going to create a lot of interest. It was the first census to be delivered online and suffered that massive distributed denial of service attack. But when the results were released, it was Australia's religious makeup that received the most attention. Here's what the ABS said. Australia remains a religious country with 60% of our population reporting a religious affiliation. However, the proportion of people reporting no religion, including people with secular and other spiritual beliefs, increased to 30% in 2016, up from 22% 5 years ago. So are we really losing our religion, or are the results a more realistic portrayal that tallies with other data? One of the leading researchers in this field is Alianne Miles of McCrindle Research. And after appearing with her on the panel of The Drum on ABC television, we continued our discussion on Open House.
Excellent, Stephen. Great to be with you again.
It's been interesting since that Drum this appearance, and there's been some social media, particularly on Twitter, some debates around whether the atheists were successful in the campaign that they ran, whether it was the fact that the question itself had been reworded, whether it's the fact that the composition of religion in Australia is changing, or whether, which would be my own view, that it was actually all three. What's your thought?
Stephen, I agree with you. There's been a lot of interest in this question and the rise of the no religion category. Why has it grown from 22% to 30%? And of course, it's a mixture of all of those different reasons that you have just provided. Now, the first of those, of course, is that the option for the no religion was moved to the top of the question, and rightly so. It is an option that looks at that more individuals tick than the other boxes. Now, one thing to remember about how the question was worded, is that every other religion, Hinduism, Buddhism, Islam, they get their own tick box. But of course, you've got the no religion tick box, and then you've got the different denominations, you've got Catholic, Anglican, Presbyterian, etc., and those tick box. So you don't have one Christian tick box. And of course, people don't see themselves in that way anymore. They don't identify perhaps with a denomination as much as with a faith, or many Christians, if they go to church, they say, I walk with God. So they don't even see themselves in that category, and hence why there is some changes there in terms of, I guess, what the question does provide and what it can't provide, which is a deeper layer insight, which we're talking about today.
No, there's been a whole discussion in the Christian community about whether at some stage we ought to be encouraging people just to tick some sort of generic Christian box. We might leave that debate to another time, I suppose, but although to ask you as a statistician, would that be useful or not useful?
I guess it depends on the purpose for which this data is used. Right. I think that the way that it stands does give an indication of the different denominations, different adherence and identification. So it is a useful tool for understanding how things are shifting. For example, every time the census is done, there's more denominations that are added to the census list that are categorized, and there's other ones that are removed. So it does show the nuance and the detail of how those groupings happen, and generally the groupings of the denominations into the Christianity religion is done in a way that does reflect what's happening on the ground.
Well, this is interesting. Let's just talk about that for a moment, because the purpose of these statistics and the reason the ABS collects them and around the world, the reason this data is collected, is because it tells you something about what's going on in your society. It's not supposed to be used like a public opinion poll. And yet, I think it's been unseemly to see the atheists, for instance, saying, oh, guess what? No religion is now bigger than Catholicism. Now, that really is comparing apples with oranges, because as you've pointed out, no religion isn't a religion, although you could make a theological point to say that atheism was a religious belief because it's a belief in a not God. Anyway, so that's a theology point. The ABS must feel at some level deep down that treating the census like an opinion poll on whether religion is good or bad, which is what the atheists seem to be turning it into, is not the purposes for which this data is collected.
Absolutely, Stephen. 100% agree with you. It is interesting to see that the atheists have somehow used this no religion figure of 29.6% and interpreted it as though those individuals all are atheists, when of course there is a separate category and classification for atheism, and that proportion is less than 1% of the population. It's a very small fraction of the population that fit into that. I think it's about 0.5% exactly. So those in the no religion category, they may still have a belief in a higher thing, being principle or power, or have some element of spirituality. When we did this, we asked a similar question to the census question in a recent study to a national sample of 1,000 Australians.
Yeah, which we spoke about previously on Open House.
We did, yes. And what we added to that question was an option for spiritual but not religious. And so what we found is that 14% of Australians, 1 in 7, actually identify as spiritual, not religious. So what you will find is that many of those who might say no religion, or who nominally identify with a faith, might end up in that category. So it's certainly not, as you say, intended to be a vote that informs an opinion piece or a poll, and certainly not stretched to the extent that it has, where it then impacts on funding or on other government initiatives and policies. That certainly is not the intent of the question at all.
Right. Well, we're in heated agreement on that, Ellie-Anne, so we can move on to a further aspect of this, which is very interesting. It seems to me that the religion question also reflects patterns of migration. So let's talk a little bit about that. You've got some new data now, or new analysis, on this whole migration question.
That's right. Well, since the last census came out in 2011, we've welcomed an additional 1.3 million new migrants from over 180 countries into Australia. Now, that's remarkable when you think that now 26% of Australians were born overseas, which means that we actually have a higher proportion of overseas-born population than the US or Canada, New Zealand, twice as high as the UK. So it means we're very diverse, very multicultural, and we've seen this acceleration of migrants as well. 18% of the individuals who live in Australia who were born overseas have in fact arrived since 2012. And of course, we're seeing a changing of the guard in terms of where migrants are coming from, no longer from parts of Europe, but now predominantly from Asia. So the top 7 out of 10 countries of birth for recent migrants is in the Asia region, China.
And Asia region, China and India, which then says that the number of Hindus are growing as well as the number of Buddhists in this country.
That's right. So we're seeing the religion question reflect that migration pattern, whereas now Islam has overtaken Buddhism as the second largest other religion at 2.6%. That's up from 2.2%. And Hinduism is up to 1.9% from 1.3%. So relatively small figures, but we're seeing that increase because of those migration patterns.
Now, in the intervening days since the figures came out, you've drilled down further. You've found that not only is the pattern changing in a global or in a national sense, but then you look at individual suburbs, and in some individual suburbs, the number of migrants has become the majority.
Absolutely. It's so fascinating, Stephen, to look at the demographics down to the suburb level. And what you find is that in some places in our inner cities, more than 7 in 10 individuals were in fact born overseas. So obviously you've got the national at 26%. But then when you look at some of the areas in our cities, when we look at New South Wales, for example, you look at Haymarket, Harris Park, Willeye Creek, Ultimo, even Rhodes. I mean, these are all areas where there are more than 7 in 10 individuals who live in those suburbs were in fact born overseas.
Wow. And what about in Queensland?
When we look at Queensland, it's slightly less predominant. However, you still have quite a large proportion in parts of the inner city, Robertson, McGregor, Stretton, Sunnybank, Brisbane City. These places all have over 55%. It's about the 60% of individuals in those suburbs born overseas. And interestingly, when you look at some of the suburbs that I mentioned in the centre of Sydney and Melbourne, up to about half of the individuals actually are recent migrants. So imagine in these suburbs, you have not only a lot of movement and change over the last 5 years, but the people who are living there now, up to half of them didn't even live in Australia 6 years ago. And that's about the same for about a third of those living in Brisbane City, the suburb in the inner city in Brisbane there. So a lot of change reflecting the migration patterns.
If you're going to put services then that would help people to feel more connected with the communities around them, you'd start with those sorts of suburbs, I suppose.
Absolutely. And when we think about these migrants looking to make Australia home, of course, they're connecting with other individuals from their own home communities and oftentimes have very little to do with, I guess, the Australia that you and I might identify with in their own areas and because of the contact that they have. So it is really important to integrate and to realize so many individuals in our communities are so new and have, I guess, we've got so much to learn from them and them from us on what it means to call Australia home.
Now, just one final question, back to the religion question as such. Is it a phenomenon that we're seeing that younger people generally are more in keeping with a secularized culture than their older counterparts?
That's right. We're seeing this move away from institutionalism, aren't we? And so we've seen this rise in no religion amongst the younger generation, particularly where now you have nearly as many young people aged 18 to 34 who have no religion as who identify with Christianity. That's both about 2 in 5. And what it is really not only a pushback on Christian institutions, but of course also a pushback on other institutions and service clubs and unions. I mean, these membership-based organizations are all struggling to connect with young people. You know, it's not that young people aren't active in their communities and aren't interested in social issues, but they're not necessarily joining a political group or a local club or a local church. They're voicing their opinions elsewhere and activating themselves in different ways. And so that's certainly been reflected in the data.
Hey, Ali-Anne, thank you so much once again for your great analysis on this.
Thank you so much, Stephen.